This is episode 35 of UFO Encounters. This week I'm reading from Lizzie Clarkson's book, Ordinary People and UFOs, a memoir of contact. When I have guests on my podcasts, I read their books to work out questions for the episodes. When reading these books, I always find such fascinating information that never makes it into the podcast, and here I get a chance to give you a peek into the book. I put a link to the book in the show notes, and I did seek permission to record the extract from the book, and the author kindly said yes. And so if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. So the first part that I'm going to read is from chapter 4, and this is what Lizzie has written. My little one, then 6, was sitting at our bedroom window, which wasn't screened for insects at the time, where we could rest on the windowsill and gaze out. We lived only 50 metres back from the highway, and being central to shops and cafes, the neighbourhood was aglow with street lights and cars. "Mum," she called, "come and see this, quickly." Running from the next room, it didn't take a second to know that the black triangle slowly emerging from above our heads was not of this world. When something like this occurs, I can adamantly say there is no fear. Absolutely none. In those moments, it is so beyond anything one could experience that it elicits only awe and wonder. It truly exists outside of any predictable experience we could reference it to, and we literally had no emotion attached to it. We were both silent and watching. Ever so slowly, and in my opinion deliberately, it floated over us into full view. In my mind, I heard myself say, "Stare at its parts to take it all in, so you can remember it." I made every effort to look at it all, and it gave me the time to do so. Being dinner time, the suburban lighting provided unhindered vision for us to sufficiently absorb every detail. Its proximity to us was such that if we were on our roof, we could have brushed our hands along its base as it gently passed above. It was completely black, smooth and shiny in texture. At about 3 or 4 meters wide, it travelled with one point forward and the other 2 points to the rear. Underneath, I could see shapes and parts, and on each corner there were black balls of the same colour and material, about 1.5 feet in diameter. As it emerged in full view between our house and the neighbour's, it was evident there were no windows. Focusing intently, I saw on each of the 3 sides of the base that there were moving pieces, sliding back and forth in unison along the edges. Completely silent, with no light emitted, it moved with a gentle horizontal glide. I wondered then, and still do, about the occupants. The height of the craft was no more than 1 meter, and if there were pilots, they must have been tiny. In following years, after seeing quite a few with limited space, I often wondered about the beings' sizes. Since the variety of spaceships were completely different in their appearance, I presume they must be different races. After interactions with them, I pondered over the years if they knew me somehow, or if it was simply the effect my focus or my brain was having on the quantum field around us to attract them. Over the years, my thoughts on this have evolved, as I evidence throughout the book. In this first monumental encounter, I knew immediately that this visitation was associated with my retreat. I just knew it. It was confirmation for something I'd ummed and ahed about engaging in, and it exceeded any expectation one could have imagined in response to my doubts. I hadn't deliberately asked for any sign if what I'd paid for was right, as I didn't think like that then. I'd accepted from Ram's teachings that we make our own reality, not wait for it by some luck or chance. This was too far out, unimaginable, and occurred concurrently with my worry. Yes, I was onto something very big. So I'm going to jump forward just a little bit just to read this paragraph. Before returning to my first retreat experience, let me add that a student in one of my classes also saw the same craft. Months after our experience, a boy in one of my medieval lessons on witchcraft, which often invites conversation out of the box when you teach such topics, piped up that he'd seen a UFO. When I asked in front of the class what he'd seen, he said, "A black triangle, One night at Palm Beach when I was riding my pushy. Exactly the same encounter, and also where it had occurred for my daughter and me. Without anyone seeing, I later whispered that I'd seen this one too. Okay, so now I'm going to jump forward to chapter 7, which is titled The Boomerang. And this part comes from where Lizzie is meditating outside with a friend. On the night with my friend, I instead gazed directly in front of me at the treetops across the road. I think I lowered my gaze on this occasion to extend the time I could sit without arching my head up, as I'd normally be laying back on the grass. Neither of us talked, naturally, and I was engaged in the discipline to the best of my untrained and scattered mind's ability. I must have been doing something right, however, for what happened next. Usually, when something distracts me, it's instantaneous, from what is otherwise supposed to be a trance-like state. On this occasion, however, I wasn't distracted, but instead phased gently out of focus, maintaining my gaze in the exact position. When someone says they had a moment of being stunned and of not knowing what's going on, they mean it. Right in my line of vision was the silver boomerang again. It didn't enter my view from one side, it was just there, stationary and silent. This time it was about 30 to 40 meters from me, and close enough that I could approximate the width to that of a regular-sized, freestanding suburban home. No lights, windows or visible portals, just seamless silver sheeting across its surface. It was low enough that I could see its upper body, which was not high to speak of, but predominantly flattened from one side to the other. I couldn't see its underbelly because of its position directly in front of me, and the street light right next to it illuminated its upper surface. There were no striations on the wings, if you can call them that, because it didn't have a body where wings attach, just a perfectly smooth metal boomerang. Although it was flat on the top, I could detect it had a gradual thickening towards its centre, creating some space for occupants in the middle, but certainly not much. It was positioned from the side, but sufficiently angled that I could see its breadth across both wings. If I was to estimate the cabin height, I'd say no more than a metre and a half, so whoever was in there was obviously seated or very small. After about 10 seconds of gazing, a row of lights lit up simultaneously across the entire upper back edge of the chevron, and voom! It instantly accelerated away from us at an infinitesimal speed over the houses in its front, with a gold stream of light at its rear. Again, utterly silent, and no displacement of air. Unbelievable. I immediately became aware that my friend was still sitting silent and unresponsive. I turned my head slightly, curious to understand why she'd remained unfazed at such a remarkable event, and noticed my friend was gazing directly as I had been, towards the same trees. I noted that her attention was strangely uninterrupted. She had not seen it. I gently turned my eyes forward and deliberated about asking her, when clearly she had not seen the brilliant display. It was puzzling to me that the power-up of lights and intense tail stream was not seen by her. I decided to say nothing. If she was looking in the same vicinity as me, she was not going to believe me. Later that night, my daughter called me in. "Mum," she said, "I saw the hugest UFO. It was so big it completely blocked out my view in the window." I could not doubt her. After all, I'd just had an unearthly boomerang stationed in front of me. She was around 12 then, and she said it was so huge she got frightened. This was very interesting. Her bedroom was on the first floor to the right where I'd been sitting, and if it was so huge, then why didn't I see that with my own? If incredibly advanced beings are able to control the separate individual minds of onlookers, then we're talking absolute masters over matter and consciousness. Okay, so this week I was reading from Lizzie Clarkson's book, Ordinary People and UFOs, A Memoir of Contact. If you want to buy the book, there is info and a link in the show notes. A great way to support the podcast is to sign up on Patreon. On the Alien UFO Podcast Patreon, when you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week, and for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. If you want to give the extended episodes a try, there is a 7-day free trial. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.